Thank you. It's nice to be here in the deep south, all the way from North Kerry. Some of you are vaguely familiar, and my face will be vaguely familiar to you from some of the open mic sessions in the Stowell, at the Stowell Writers Week. And I was here a couple of years ago. You had a night with Mike Gallagher. I don't know whether any of you were here for that. I think some of you were, yeah. First of all, thank you, Paul, for inviting me. And thank you all very generally for having me here. And thank you, Sean, for doing an incredible job at the Compare. And I know how difficult that can be. Sort of backhanded thank you, Paul, for that wonderful film that you've just shown. Colin McManus's poem was just fabulous. And I really appreciate having to follow it. Thank you. I'm going to begin with a few poems from my latest collection. I'll slot a bit of the older one in the middle and finish up with some more from this and a couple of poems, or maybe three, that I've written since the publication of this book in June of this year, in May of this year. May of last year now. Beginning with Speed. I broke my father's spade today, bent the blade against a sullen stone and felt the final fracture, saw the gaping wound and knew that wood and steel no longer bound his hand to mine, this line between us lost beyond recall. Caress the silken shaft of polished ash, where fingers grip and hip and sinew tie combined with wit and skill to break reluctant soil. I broke my father's spade and thought on time, the sullen stone that one day breaks us all. Some of you will know where Torquemroe Abbey is in North Clare. At Torquemroe Abbey, the Japanese tour bus leaves, taking with it the voices of the living. Silence floods back, filling the cloisters. Among the tombs and effigies, the long dead whisper their secrets to the listening stones. Thrushes serenade a thousand souls in the green sward beyond the abbey walls. And everywhere, the hum of trees. A solitary blackbird calls me to prayer, and I respond. My pain slips away between the arches and the bell tower. I've got two poems in this collection dedicated to twin uncles that were born and brought up in the same cottage as I was born and brought up in Killachinney near Knock in County Mayo, a generation apart, but they grew up with the same people and walked the same fields and roads as I did, and I didn't get to meet them until, in one case, 40 years later, in the case of my other uncle, I suppose it would be fairly close on 60 years later. And this is for the second uncle, the one that I got to meet a couple of years ago in Canada. Austin left when I was maybe a year, 18 months old, and he went first to a coal field in Nottingham, and from there to the coal fields of Alberta in Canada, and from there up into the oil fields, back down into the coal, and this is his story. I should point out the word slain is the Munster version of schlán, which is the Irish for turf spade. And Cinderhill is a mine in Nottingham. I think the rest is fairly self-explanatory. It's called Dark Earth. I can hear the squish and squelch of my father's slain as he sinks the sharp blade into the black peat. He dips and lifts, loops the slippery sod in my direction. I move with its weight, to steer it to a spot next to its kin, where sun and wind will work their yearly miracle. My father hums softly as he bends and lifts again. At Cinder Hill I swing my pick. No humming here, only men's profanity and the ring of steel on coal. Dust clogs the air and stifles breathing. Sweat blinds. I share my snap with Jim. Cold water slakes our thirst. He talks of Calgary, his home. Oil fields, easy pickings. 6 months hard work and 6 months living free. I'm nearly 25 and life is calling me. Phyllis finally says yes. We haul our trailer north, roll from rig to rig following the work. 3 good years, then back to Canmore, down the pit once more. Like my father before me, I probe the dark earth until the mine shuts down in 79. Phyllis by my side gives me hope and home. We take things easy now, watch the boys play hockey. I ride my mountain bike beside Bow Valley Trail. High above the towering Rockies, 3 sisters smiling down. I smile right back. Canada's been good to me. No easy pickings here, just steady work and steadfast company. 60 years this land has been my home, but now and then I can still hear the squish and squelch of my father's sling as he sinks the short blade into the black peat. I don't normally get involved in writing political poetry because some people do it far, far better than I can, and there's lots of really strong voices around. But just now and again, something forces me to go to the keyboard and write something down. And one of those occasions was in 1 week in May 2014, when there were so many incidences of aggression wrought on women all over the world, including Ireland, that I had to write this. It's called Civilization. Schoolgirls in Nigeria. Yesterday their minds were filled with light. Young boys with old eyes came for them last night with noise and knives and guns. Tried and found guilty, they were led away to complete their education. A mother in Sudan, arms in shackles, she cannot hold her newly born. Her baby's wailing mingles with her own. A week, a month, a year from now, they'll take her from this place to hang. She loved a Christian God, a Christian man. A wife in Pakistan. Her family swarm around her where she lies, senseless on the courthouse steps. She swore she loved her husband, but they raged against her love. She must die to save their honor. Young Romanian girl, snatched from the street in Dublin, whipped with TV wire in a darkened room, kicked and beaten, cold water showers to reduce the bruising. Then they come, lawyers, politicians, businessmen. She's lucky to be alive. Need a drink, just a minute. You'll have to excuse me, I had open heart surgery in September, and then I said to Mike Gallagher last night that I was a bit nervous about coming here. He said, well, you survived the surgery. How bad can they be in
Cardiff? Something is up.
Blue Sky Day. This is the title poem from the collection. Tomorrow's dream-filled dawn will see my blue sky day begin. I'll be as young as poppies when the morning tumbles in. I'll be as quick as weekends, fit as fiddler's elbows at the reel. I know that I'm no child of Lur, no sailor, yet I feel at dawn on my blue sky day, I know the sound of oceans, the call of sand and sea spray, the sting of salt sea spittle on my lips, and long to be away. Away to the west I'll fly, away to the wind-lashed west on a blue sky breeze, to where the grey-backed gull will cry her warning, calling her children to her, scolding like a crone this stranger that laughs at her anger and dares to dance along her dappled shore. There will I sing my grey sky blues to dust like shells beneath my feet. I'll turn my face towards the sun and feel its sky blue heat. I'll feel your smile within. And there we'll sing our blue sky afternoon, while one by one our memories, like the waves, come drifting in. December wind. This girl that the poem is about was a traveller from the last family that lived on the side of the road in Kerry. They didn't live on the side of the road all year round, but they spent their summers in a caravan on Ladies Walk in Ballyduff, just up the road from where we were. And I did some support work in the local secondary school where she attended. And we had a love-hate relationship. She loved to abuse me. And I thought she was just totally brilliant. She really was. And she went on and she trained as a nurse eventually. So I'd like to think that I had a little contribution to make to that. But this was while she was sat in one corner growling at me and trying to do a practice on a maths leave insert paper, I was writing this on the other corner. I couldn't get that close to her. December wind. Her home, a run-down rig of chrome and tin. A piebald pony, horse box, hi-ace van. Long acre grazing and a long, hard road from home to school. Her books a heavy load. She wears a penny's tracksuit, pink and loud. Brooks neither help nor insult. Strong and proud she stands in bristled anger with no tears. Fire in her eyes and claws to hide her fears. A curse, a prayer, from her they seem the same. Her gentle spirit smothered as a flame fanned by a mocking dark December wind flickers and dies. She wraps her young girl's mind in shell as hard as roads that lie ahead and cold as winter in a wayside shed. I might just leave that one, it's a bit long. So. Stones, I had an attempt at a Villanelle, is that how you pronounce them? Villanelle. Villanelle, are we right? Good lad. Thank you. Stones. On city streets and high on wind-worn dales, hills strewn or strictly ordered, ancient stones whisper their ancient tales. On tumbled ruin, on monument and mound, by cottage neatly bordered, on city streets and high on wind-worn dales, on rocky shores where angry seas resound, by harbours safely guarded, ancient stones whisper their ancient tales. In churchyards fine with holy purpose found, each noble death recorded, on city streets and high on wind-worn dales, by moorstone huts and mansions ivy-bound, Beneath roof beams long discarded, ancient stones whisper their ancient tales. Markers in time, and yet by time disowned, ungathered, disregarded. On city streets and high on wind-worn dales, ancient stones whisper their ancient tales. Truth. Who will be the keepers of the flame? When shepherds shame their flock and mock the truth with every new transgression? Should we be surprised to find a fork in every tongue of young and old, when those who lead us feed us daily lies of such a size we barely blink at indiscretion anymore, from rank deceivers rotten to the core? Yet some would call them heroes. After all they've said and done with bomb and gun and word and deed, the very need to justify themselves long gone. Who will be the guardians of the light when might is right and wrongs are sanctified, when innocence is maimed and sacrificed in freedom's name, when none will take the blame, when every lie is truth and truth is lie? Who then will be the keepers of the flame, save you and I? That's about 10 years old, that poem, but it hasn't aged. A little more cheerful this time. I don't know whether they use the same expression in Cork, but in Kerry, a response to how you're doing is sometimes happy out. Happy out. Cliff walking, chuff spotting, hoping for a glimpse of a fish catching dolphin, dark fin dancing, black against the blue green ocean. Days when I'm more than glad to be alive. Happy out. Gulls walking, dog walking, listening to the boom of the waves down below. Scent of seaweed drifting on the soft breeze. Jackdaws hoarding, clinging to the rock face. Days when I'm more than glad to be alive. Happy out. After my surgery, that's got a whole new meaning. My mother, I've got two or three poems here from my mother. She died just before Blue Sky Day was published, which is a shame, but she had a very strong influence on my life in terms of the things that she was interested in, became the things I was interested in, the Irish language, poetry, so on. And she went as a young teenager to Manchester and made friends with a girl called Kathleen, that were lifelong friends, in fact. And they sort of drove the lads crazy going to the dance halls and around Manchester in the 1940s. And this is called Missing the Last Waltz, because they always used to have to run for the all-night train back to Altrincham to get out of Manchester before the transport closed down for the night. Much to the frustration of the lads that were hoping to get a shift, I should imagine. Missing the Last Waltz. My mother wears her bitterness like a dark shawl tonight. Turf smoke curls about her smoke-grey hair. Your father had two left feet, she spits, grasping the tongs with blue-veined fingers. She pokes the fire to coax the dying flames. I should have married a dancer, she sighs, and now her eyes are filled with the hornpipes of memory as the ghosts of a thousand hopefuls swirl her round the room. Oh, how we love to dance. We lose her for a moment in the ashes of lost chances, until once more the fading embers flicker. We could have had our pick, Kathleen and me. Twin heartbreakers in pleated dresses that left the dancers standing, dashing down Oxford Road for the last train home, missing the last waltz. She was a strong woman at a time when women needed to be strong. And she had a Hackney license when most of the people with Hackney licences, taxi drivers, would have been men. She was the one that earned the pennies that fed us through the car and the trips she took in it. This one's called Driver. A faded photograph hangs on the wall. My mother beaming proud as any peacock by a gleaming new Ford Anglia. When times were tough and love was not enough, her trips to Cove and Shannon kept us fed. My father wouldn't eat till she got home. She learned to drive a milk float in the war. Her eyes still danced and sparkled at the telling, how the farm boys whistled and policemen smiled. An extra pint for Irish girls abandoned, tied to their children when their men went home, reluctant for a fight that wasn't theirs. Once a year she took us to the seaside, boot piled high with sandwiches and cake, hot water from a woman near the coast. Her car sits silent in the shed now, dust covered, cobweb shrouded, a blanket on the bonnet to keep out the cold. How are we doing for time, Sean? Are we okay?
You've got just
30
minutes.
Okay. This is a poem that I wrote for a friend of mine. Some of you, certainly those of you who have been to Listowel, will have heard of him or come across him. A man by the name of James McGrath. No relation, he walked up to me on opening night of Writers' Week about 12 years ago and said, "Hello, John McGrath. I'm James McGrath." And we've become really powerful friends ever since. Now, he's been back and forth, and I've been over to New Mexico, 12 miles into the desert, and had a beautiful, beautiful experience of doing the reading, poetry reading, in his orchard in the desert. I know that sounds like a contradiction in terms, but James has been an inspiration. A lot of the poems I've read to you tonight have been inspired by things James has said, or we've been in his company when I've sat and written Cork and Row Abbey and quite a few other things. But it suddenly dawned on me, because this man lives 12 miles out into the desert, and he's 87 now, but every time I see him leave, maybe the last time I'll see him. So I wrote this poem after he'd gone back from the store, and then realised that it was a poem for all leavings, and it's called How Will I Know? How will I know if eagles come for you? Will swallows cease to fly? Or will the sky be filled with the beat of drums or the rushing wings of angels? Tell me more. Tell me some more. I want to find the poet core of you before you go. The mind that turns and shapes from clay of words each simple perfect line where fire and love entwine in equal measure. I want to feel the whisper of your going, knowing the poet's soul of you, to be one with the spirits that guide you even to your place of keening. Different parts of the world, I will come back to it in a few minutes. Krakow Airport. Our daughter-in-law is from Krakow. We visited with her and her family in January 2014. And it struck me, as I was waiting for the plane to come back, that there were great similarities between what was going on around me and what went on around me as a young child when I travelled from Dublin to Holyhead on the cattle boat with my parents as a young person. As an Irish immigrant, if you like. It's called Krakow Airport, January 2014. I joined the Ryanair line at Krakow Airport. The Dublin flight is late, but no one seems to mind. More time for tears and long goodbyes. Leggy girls in leopard skin and leather cling to black-clad mothers. Grim-faced boys and solemn men shake heads, shake hands. Their cans of Tisky beer, a bitter comfort now. I stand in line, remembering a queue from 60 years ago. Scuffed suitcases, sad-eyed men in suits of crumpled blue, red-eyed girls in headscarves, shuffling towards the Princess Maud converted cattle boat. Seasickness, porter and the stink of piss, then Holyhead, uncertain future filled with hope and homesickness in equal measure. Here in Krakow, boarding has begun. I watch as sons forget their macho stance, embrace their mothers. Fathers look away. Brothers, sisters, husbands, wives and sweethearts, their homecoming behind them once again, turn towards their future and gate three. Right. I'll just do the other Twins poem and then I'll do the more recent ones. And that should be about right. Okay. This one's called From Mayo to Montrose. Paddy was the less lucky of the Twins because he ended up doing three tours of duty in Vietnam. He got called up and he suffered the effects of Agent Orange. And although he did retire, he had a lot of problems with dementia and died at a relatively young age. And his widow is a great friend of ours and we visited with her a couple of times. And this is the last time we went. We went to visit his grave in Montrose in Colorado. And, well, it tells the story anyway. It's called From Mayo to Montrose, Closing the Circle. It's peaceful here. The deer come down at dawn to graze on funeral flowers. Sometimes when the wind sings, I hear the voices of the old ones calling to each other across fields and ditches. Bridget and Tom, Delia, Pa and the others, busy with hay and mayo, racing to beat the rain. They speak to me when the sun is warm on the strong green grass above me. Great weather for hay in Colorado, warm blue skies and never a cloud. No rain to wash the gravestones, only the soft sounds of summer and the singing of the breeze in the cottonwood trees. My first wife sleeps beside me. My last love visits in the cool of evening. She likes to sit and help me reminisce on people and on places that I knew before we met. She stays till sunset, kisses the granite, and she goes. Last week she brought a visitor, my brother's boy from Ireland. We talked a while of neighbours and of places we both shared, of cool spring wells and whitewashed cottages where he and I were reared but never met. He found the smooth glass pebbled by the gate when they were leaving, just one of many, like the teardrops in this place. Picked it up, weighed it in his palm, dropped it in his pocket. I saw him nod as he looked back and knew that he would do what must be done to close the circle. It's peaceful here, no deer, no funeral flowers, only a pebble by a ruined door and everywhere the ripple of the rain. Another Polish poem, Auschwitz, 2015. Auschwitz on a stifling July day. Emilia pushes her sleeping baby along the gravel pathway underneath the sign that tells us work will set us free. They wait outside together, Jacob and his mother, while we climb concrete stairs, their edges worn by countless shuffling feet, and wander through grim rooms that echo with despair. Names and photographs, displays of cases, glasses, human hair and worse. In one room there, a model of the mechanisms of death. Outside once more, my back against a red brick wall, I shade my grandson Jacob from the searing July heat and think of all the other Jacobs in this place that no one could protect. none of us need to be reminded of the horrors that took place in Paris in November. I wrote this poem that leaves more questions than answers, and I don't know what the answers are. Greater minds than mine try to find answers. Hopefully they will someday. It's called Sammy. Sammy was a good boy, said Mohammed. Helped his mother and me, selling clothes in Saint-Denis. Then one day, no Sammy, just a text to say he'd gone to Syria. Sammy was a good boy, said Mohammed. Kept in touch, our gentle son, the warrior. We begged him to come home, but selling clothes in Saint-Denis would never be enough. Our son, the rebel, has gone to fight the forces of Assad. Sammy is a good boy, said Mohammed. I will go to him and tell him to begin again, somewhere in Africa, far from Assad's men. Sammy always listens to his father. Sammy was a good boy back in Saint-Denis. In an old bus filled with new recruit jihadists, rebels shouting, Allahu Akbar, Mohammed's gone to Syria to meet his son. They crossed the Turkish border at Gaziantep, past Kalashnikovs and minefields. Under a black flag in the desert near Aleppo, Mohammed meets his son, but not alone. For eyes and ears are everywhere. Mohammed's gone to Syria to meet his son, but Sammy has new friends, cold as winter. He will not listen to his father under a black flag in the desert near Aleppo. Mohammed lost his angry, gentle son in a theatre in Paris in November. So many more lost sons and daughters too under a black flag in the desert near Aleppo. As I say, a lot more questions than answers. The master. Everybody worth their salt as a poet this year has to write a 1916 poem, right? So I thought I'd get my what out of the way early. But I sort of came at it from a slightly different angle. It's called The Master. And he featured way back in one of the poems that I read to you about the teacher that used to give me a hard time when I was in the national school. The master ruled our world. Fear and Cain brought daily tears and wheels that faded into purple brands that nurtured our resentment. Deference given grudgingly by sullen boys with scant defence against his right to rage and rule with iron hand. He was the master. Morning long he'd beat and bellow, and when the lunchtime football game had tamed our youthful turbulence, the despot would cast off his tyrant's cloak. A chant, Sir, Sir. History, history, for the non-Irish speakers. From 30 voices, eager for a glimpse of who we were. An arm raised, the room would fade to silence, the master would begin. Fado, long, long ago, Finn and his Fianna roamed this land. The master's words wove life into our story and filled our youthful hearts with warrior pride. By Oisin's side we rode to Tiernan Oge and prayed with Patrick on an Antrim hill. When Northmen came, we raised our battle cries. Our blood boiled red with Brian at Clontarf. The master's voice, a sigh, a whisper, then we heard how lesser men brought grief and shame as strangers came to plunder us again. Heroes and villains, victory and defeat, 800 years unfolding year by year, nourished our hopes, drove us to despair. Litanies of treachery, deceit and broken dreams, until we knew but one recourse remained, rebellion. How his roar would fill the room, as Pierce, McDonough, Plunkett and the rest took up their guns and then laid down their lives in bloody protest for a nation. The men of Easter Week stand tall and strong. The world is watching as they make their mark on history and on our rebel hearts. The master's eyes are closed. His work is done. So is mine. Thank you.